of Founder Chats. I'm your host, Josh Bickford, founder of Bear Metrics. This week, we talk with Laura Roeder, and by we, I mean me. Laura is the founder of Edgar, which does social media queuing and lots of other things. She has a super interesting story about building this social media training product and then ultimately using that to be able to launch this software product and getting to $100,000 in MRR really quickly. We talk about everything from building a company with your spouse, to having kids, taking time off, being entrepreneurial and passing that down to your kids, and all sorts of really fun stuff. Also, you can now find Founder Chats at founderchats.com, and you can subscribe there. And I think that covers it. Let's jump in. Enjoy. So I used to have a thing called Pop Survey.
Yeah, I know it.
Okay. So I was thinking, like, trying to figure out, like, when our paths initially crossed. And I think that was Pop Survey was probably this was way before, like, Edgar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right. I think, I don't remember, maybe I was just like, I like your software, hi. Like, I don't remember why I talked to you, but yeah, it was definitely through Pop Survey.
That's funny. So I guess we can start there. So back then, that was like, you were at sort of like consulting, but like not straight up consulting, right? Like you were doing selling that stuff, right?
Information products. Yeah. Yes. So I actually wasn't doing consulting. I mean, hardly ever. The business model was training information products.
Okay. So training. Right. So would you sell, I mean, like, would you do a training kind of thing and record it and then sell it after the fact, or was it always just like producing training materials to be consumed by as many people as possible?
The latter, yeah. Okay. I mean, I would sometimes do them live online just for, like, you know, the energy of creating the product, but sure. Yeah, the intent was to create consumable training.
Yeah. So how did you get into that? I mean, you know, you just said, hey, I'm going to start doing social media stuff or training or what?
Yeah, how I got into that. So when I first started working for myself, I was a designer, a freelance print and web designer in like 2007.
Did you go to school for that, or?
I went to school for advertising, okay. But I studied design in school and had like design internships and stuff. So yeah, that's what I thought I was going to do. So, and that is what I did after college. I had a job at an agency for like a year, and then I quit to start working for myself. So I was making websites, and I was, in retrospect, doing a lot of like online marketing consulting, which I just literally didn't know any better. I was like, well, I'm making them a website. I should probably tell them like how to get traffic to their site and what to put on it. And, you know, I just thought that's what you did. Yeah. So when social media started to become a thing in like 2008, I guess, is like around when Twitter started. My clients were just like, well, you're young, like, you know about social media, like, why don't you tell me how to use it? And I was like, okay. So that kind of evolved into people being like, you know, people would pay you like just to tell them how to use social media. And I was like, that's crazy. That sounds like the easiest job ever.
That's funny. We have super similar stories. I went to school for design, and I mean, so were you ever employed anywhere else other than that agency?
No. So okay. I started working for myself really young. Right. Yeah.
So I mean, I didn't last as long as you did. I lasted 7 weeks. So like I graduated college in 2005, got married like a month later. My wife and I moved to Colorado, and we're like, well, I guess we should get jobs. So I got a job at a like interactive design agency, and then 7 weeks later, I was like, nope,
no.
can't do it. Not gonna do it. That's funny. So you made the transition from like the agency to self-employment. Did you pre-training stuff? Was teaching people or like training people something that you had done before and you enjoyed? So this was like, you were just like, oh, cool, I like this.
Yeah. I think it was something that I found that I had like a natural talent for. I found that I was good at like explaining technical concepts to people in a way that they could understand. So yeah, it's basically what I started doing for clients, you know, as we're talking about consulting, like I did start out doing consulting, and then I kind of discovered the whole world of information products and online training. And I was like, oh, that seems like a really great business model, especially because I was starting to obviously play around with marketing myself on social media. And you find quite quickly, okay, this is going to work a lot better if I can have clients, you know, all over the world, all over the country. If I'm promoting myself on Twitter, it just makes sense that I would have something to sell nationwide. Yeah.
What was the so this is 2008, you said?
Yeah.
What was the format for, I mean, I'm sure, certainly video stuff was already pretty big, but I mean, was that your primary mode of training or?
Yeah. So it was 2008 was kind of transition. 2009 is when I launched my first course, and that was a course about Twitter. I just did webinars. I did, like, at the time I did 6 weekly webinars. Whoa. Live. Yeah. It was like way too long. I know. Who wants to listen to like 6 weekly webinars about Twitter? I definitely learned to make things shorter after that. Like, no one made it through the whole thing. It's like too painful. So I just did them, you know, live weekly and recorded them. And I can remember the first time I did it, I made $3,000. And I was like, because I've been doing consulting, and I was like, to get a $3,000 contract for me at the time was this, like, I would chase them for like 6 months, you know? So I was like, whoa, like $3,000. It was just a really good fit for me for a business model. It felt like a lot easier to me than consulting.
Yep. So how long before you started, you start producing all this training stuff, were you just straight up soloing that stuff for a long time, or?
No, I've always been pretty good about like bringing on, like, you know, in the start, just virtual assistants and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I always had a kind of small crew. As early as 2009, I had like 2 people helping me with customer service and setting up tech stuff and things like that. But it was very gradual from moving to part time. It took me years before I brought on my first W-2 employee.
Sure, sure.
Making the like, once you start producing training stuff, what? Like, how did you get that out there? Was it just word of mouth, or did you, I mean, obviously you're touting social stuff, so that plays a big part of it, but did it take a long time to like really get that snowball going, or?
No, it really didn't. I was using obviously social media marketing, content marketing, and I think I entered the scene at kind of a good time. Like, at that time, the copy blogger was really big, pro blogger was really big. I mean, obviously both these sites still are really big, but, the blogger conference in Vegas was a big deal. And I remember like in 2009, I was on pro bloggers, like 10 bloggers to watch in 2009. And at the time,
I've arrived.
Yeah. It was, and it really did get me a ton of traffic and stuff too. So, World Domination Summit, I went to the first one, like kind of, I basically found my circle, right away, which was, you know, partially just luck. And I was able to kind of make myself known within that circle. And another one of my early courses ended up, being Creating Fame, which became kind of like my big signature course. Cause the whole idea was using all these tools to make yourself famous in your field, famous in your niche. Like, I kind of figured out that idea early on of like, I didn't know it was called Thought Leader at the time, but I'll make people trust me, I'll make people know who I am, and then they'll buy my courses. And I guess I just kind of figured out how to do that.
Yeah. So you speak a ton at conferences, or at least have in the past. So do you feel like the benefit of those was, I guess I'm kind of like leading on the question here, but I always found like whenever I go to conferences that, the purpose of those is like less about finding new customers and more about like maybe it's more like the networking component where like you meet other people who are doing the same thing as you and less like the people who would be buying stuff from you. Is that the case for you, or?
I totally agree with that. I think that positioning yourself is a huge part of it. Also, early in my career in 2009, I had my own panel at South by Southwest. So that sounded like very impressive. Sure. I mean, it was a panel. I just organized the panel, right? I wasn't even like the person that people wanted to hear talk, but it sounded great. And it's one of those things you can check off. I spoke at South by Southwest, and now I could say, okay, I've spoken at South by Southwest. But something that's always fascinating to me is once you meet someone in person, you are so in with them for years and years. Like, I remember I met, I need to remember his name. Ryan, I'm totally blanking out on his last name. The guy that runs YEC. don't know if you're familiar with that.
I know the Ryan you're talking about, yeah, and I cannot remember his last name.
You know, I remember meeting him when he was working with Penelope Trunk at South By in 2009, and we talked for like 10 minutes, and then I haven't seen him again in person until literally this year, but like we kept in touch over email. If I ever needed a favor, he was happy to do it for me, and vice versa. And it's always been amazing to me noticing that in-person connection. I don't know what it is. You talk to someone for 10 minutes and now they're like, they're your buddy. And that thing makes a huge difference in your career.
I think it's interesting because, you know, certainly over the past few years, I've figured out that, I can be like a bit of a lone wolf and had been for a long time, when building stuff, but it's like, even not from getting a customer standpoint, but just being able to like hit up somebody to like pick their brain about something or throw something past them or something. And even if it is like years later, after you've met in person or like, you know, had dinner or like gone to some conference, whatever, it pays off big time for sure. So let's back up a little bit. Well, or maybe jump forward. So you're Edgar right now. Is that the only thing you're doing, or do you like you still have the social media training stuff?
It's the only thing. So yeah, we've phased out the social media training business. I mean, we're too busy with Edgar to do it in any sort of clean way. Yep. So the site's still like lingering. But yeah, the only business I'm working on is Edgar.
So what's for folks that don't know, what was sort of the impetus for Edgar? So Edgar's like social media scheduling stuff. I mean, I might be simplifying it too much, but
a little bit. But I mean, that's the core. Sure. So yeah, Edgar actually came as a direct result from training. So I was teaching people how to build a library of social media content and then repurpose it. The whole idea that I was teaching is that 5 to 10% of your content gets seen by your audience on social media. So creating new content multiple times a day for the rest of time is not super effective. Instead, it makes sense to build a library of, you know, links back to your old blog posts, inspirational quotes, whatever, and keep cycling through it. So I was teaching people how to do that manually, keeping a spreadsheet with all your updates. And that's how Edgar came about. It's a tool that does all the things that's what makes us different from other social tools is we repeat updates in perpetuity, which other tools don't do. And we keep all your updates in a categorized library so that you can continue to like improve and curate and view your social as more of a body of work rather than like a random misspelled tweet that you sent out.
Right.
So what, you know, obviously if you're doing training for social media kind of stuff, and then now you've got this tool and you've got a significant following on the training stuff.
Right.
So, you know, creating a product for them is really handy for like launching something. So do you feel like, I mean, obviously the, like you said, you kind of, Edgar was almost built, cause you realized this need. But do you feel like was the software part, like launching a product for an audience that you already have, was that like really intentional or that just kind of worked out and that was nice?
I would say both. I mean, it was just kind of the best software idea that I had. I've been wanting to do a SaaS model for a long time, but I never had an idea good enough until this. I was like, okay, this one's a good idea. I think people will pay for this. Obviously, I was very happy to have an idea that I could sell to an audience that I'd spent 5 years accumulating, and that made things so much easier. I mean, you know, we're a bootstrap business, but it's not fair to compare us. Like, we had a small team when we started, you know, and we were using money from the other business. And we had a list of 75,000 people. Like, that's not really bootstrapping. You know, that's not really like, I guess it's bootstrapping, but it's certainly not starting from zero.
Right.
You know, so yes, I mean, if you can do that, if you can leverage your existing audience and existing list, obviously that's great. And that's also something that I've learned is the value of this thought leadership, because now that, you know, I've created this following on Twitter, like I started blogging on Medium and a lot of those people from Twitter come over to Medium. It just makes everything easier where you don't have to start from zero every time.
Yep. So obviously having the audience at the start helps a ton for kicking things off. But so now Edgar's been around for what?
About 2 years.
2 years? Okay. 2 years. So you're 2 years in. What, and you've probably kind of exhausted a lot of the initial little kickstart that your list gave you. So what are some of the bigger things that you guys have trouble with now? Like what are the big hurdles for you?
I mean, now it's less about marketing and more about like hiring and team stuff. So we're at 18 people now. This is the biggest company that I've ever run by far. You know, every person we add is the biggest team I've ever been involved with.
Yep.
So every software person knows the challenge of hiring developers. Mm. That's taken two or three times as long as we think it will for every single person. Your team goes through a lot of changes from around 10 people to around 20 people. You have to change the way everything's organized. So, yeah, now the challenges are less about, like, how do we attract customers and more, like, how do we maintain a really great organization?
Mm-hmm. Do you, so you're producing a bunch of training stuff years ago. Now, presumably, you personally are not producing a bunch of stuff, and you're doing sort of the manager stuff, correct? So pros and cons of that. I mean, like, what do you like about that, and what is sort of annoying or a pain?
So this was actually very deliberate for me. I actually really love the management stuff, which sure. you know, is maybe a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
Because I stopped writing a long time ago. I haven't written. Now, like I said, I started blogging on Medium, but even those are like edited and I have help. I haven't written for my own blog or newsletter in many years. I mean, it used to be ghostwritten under my name, so a lot longer than people realize, because that was something I could do, but it was never my favorite thing to do. So I'm very happy to be out of like the content creator role. I've never really considered myself like a creative. Definitely more that business side that likes to have other people do the creative.
Yep. Okay. So what, now that you've got a team that's growing, what's from the manager standpoint, what do you find hardest about having a team of almost two dozen people?
I guess the hardest, I mean, one thing is finding that balance between like maintaining your point of view. Mm-hmm. And obviously as you grow, you bring on people who are more talented than you in their area. They obviously have their own point of view that's different from yours. I have a marketing background, so that's been the hardest thing for me to let go of. And I finally did this year after a false start. Like, I hired someone before and they didn't really work out, and then I took it back and I was like, this has gotten ridiculous. Like, I have to let this go. And it's still a challenge for me to decide, like, how much do I want to advise him versus, you know, him putting his own idea, or even him just, like, learning. Sometimes I'm like, I don't think that's going to work out, but, like, maybe I'm wrong, and, like, I should let him see, and then he'll know if it works out or not. And I just have to bite my tongue. Like, we just had our in-person company retreat in Denver, and each department gave an update about something they were doing. And when he was giving his update about marketing, there were, like, so many things that I wanted to be like, let me explain this. Like, let me add this. Or, like, he forgot to say that. And I was just, like, sitting on my hands being like, don't say anything. Do not undermine him, like, speaking over him in front of the entire company. So I have to, like, make myself not talk over him. He's obviously like a saint to put up with me. I know it's
well, it's like the I mean, so I have a design background and would always have, and I, when I was doing design consulting, would have to, I'd hate it when a client was like, you know, like, well, I do a little design work on the side myself. And I'm like, no, don't talk. And I, now I'm in that position. Like, I'm effectively the client. And so the designers have to like, oh man. So is the whole team's remote, correct?
Yeah.
But you're in Austin. Are there other people in Austin that are on the team?
So yeah. And to be clear, we don't have an office. We are in US and Canada though. We're not remote worldwide, which is making me feel a little different. My husband built the initial version of the software, and now he's kind of like an advisor to the company. So he lives in my house in Austin.
There we go. Okay, cool. So two people share an office.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a good point actually. So so your husband basically built the first version.
Yeah.
What Had you guys worked together before Edgar? Like worked on anything together?
We hadn't. No. So we at that point we had been together for maybe about 2 years, and we were both like self-employed. Like he was doing some other projects freelance. So we were like, yeah, we weren't working on any projects together. But because we both like worked from home together, and I would talk to him about, you know, the startups he was working with and stuff. We did like talk about business a lot. That's obviously very different than actually building something.
Sure. Sure. My wife and I worked together. We built an e-commerce toy company for years. This is back in like 2006 or 7 or something like that. And love working together. But there's a lot of people who were like, yeah, I would just throw myself out a window before I worked with my spouse, right? The problem we always had was not just talking about work stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So is that something that you guys try to avoid, or you just like embrace it, or...
We've gone through different phases. I mean, if it were up to me, I would just talk about work all the time. So my husband, Chris, definitely is like, sometimes like you have to stop now,
you know,
we actually don't find that talking about it, you know, obviously like we're entrepreneurs, it's fun. We love to talk about it. As long as we're not actually going out of control with working too much, the talking about it is kind of fine. But we have a 1.5-year-old, so we can't work that much.
I mean, the 1.5-year-old, I'm sure, forces a conversation change.
Right, and it's good. Like, you can't be, I mean, I know you have a bunch of kids. Like, you just can't really be a crazy workaholic. Like, kids take up a lot of time.
They do. Well, and I mean, you know, I think of the typical sort of, like, poster child for Silicon Valley is, like, this 20-something-year-old single white dude who's sitting in a room coding. And I mean, I can't do that at all. So, but I think that's a healthy thing, right? Like it forces some good habits. So you mentioned your kid. So you took off a significant chunk of time shortly after you launched Edgar.
So I was actually pregnant when the company launched. We launched basically July 2014. I had my son January 2015. So it was early in the company, and I took off 3 months maternity leave, actually truly off. So in retrospect, it was such an amazing constraint because I built the business. When I launched the business in my head, I was like, this business has to grow without me because I'm going to be gone for 3 months within the first year of the business. Mm-hmm. So I would be pregnant forever startup. Maybe not, but at least have that kind of idea in my head.
Right, right, right.
Because it was actually really great for making sure we had the systems in place that I didn't have to be there fighting fires.
Well, and it kind of, I mean, because it grew quite well without you around.
We actually hit 100K a month while I was gone.
I mean, to me, that's almost... it relieves such a huge amount of stress for any future thing. Like whether, say you're just, somebody gets really sick in your family, you've got to take some time off. Like you've already faced something and you're like, I know this is going to work just fine without me.
Yeah. And you know, I think one of the reasons I was able to do it. So another like part of my history that we haven't mentioned is Bee School with Marie Forleo. So it's a really popular training program for female entrepreneurs. Marie and I started it together, and I ended up leaving it to pursue my own business. It was basically a side project that went crazy, and I made a lot more money exiting it than I had running the company, which I had just never had any kind of experience like that before. And it really makes you, I mean, it sounds great, right? And it was great, but it also makes you be like, so this thing blew up after I left. what does that mean?
Yeah.
And it was good because it just showed me this very clear life lesson of like, I can detach my hours from the money I make because I made way more money than I ever had before by leaving that company. So I think that lesson being ingrained in me made it much easier to set up Edgar in this way.
Yeah. What, so tangent, what, so were you entrepreneurial as a kid? Like,
Not really. I mean, nothing crazy. I would set up like dance camp where I'd like teach girls to dance.
Yeah. I mean, that's more than a lot of kids, I would say. Do you, being sort of an entrepreneur, and I, that's like, to me, is a big word for saying like professional problem solver. Is that something that you want to be intentional about teaching to your kids, or like you just sort of, you think it'll just come naturally because you and your husband are both that way?
It's obviously something, you know, that I've thought a lot about since becoming a parent, and Chris will be like, you can't force him to be an entrepreneur. You have to be happy if he wants to do something else, right. You know, because I do think it's definitely a life that I'm very much, you know, bought into, yep, for myself. And I think it's a great way to go. But also the good thing about running a company is you work with a lot of people who are obviously employed by you.
Sure.
And you see why people do that and how that's great as well. We recently hired someone who'd been running his own agency for a long time. And he's like, I cannot tell you the feeling of having someone else just hand me a check at the same time every month. Oh, is amazing.
So nice. Yeah.
I was like, okay, I can really see that. So, you know, he won't be able, he's growing up in a family of entrepreneurs, he won't be able to help but learn about it. And we are a little more unconventional about our ideas about school and college. We're not saving for college. We're, yep, not especially convinced, you know, what the state of it will be, yes, by the time he's there, or if we should go and,
yep,
see what we do when it comes time for school. So we're definitely unconventional.
We're the same way. I mean, my wife and I met in like a private college, so just so expensive. And both of us were like, we did not need to go to college.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, we're not really saving for college either. And I think, but it's hard to not, there are certain things that school can be useful for. Most things, I would say it's not, but, I think there's no way that I want to tell my kids to not go to college. Do not ever go to college, you know? But, you know, I constantly try to get my kids to sell stuff, or like to each other even. Like, hey, you want your sister wants that? How much are you going to pay for it? You know?
So, I would say I definitely want to teach them just the idea of kind of being a freelancer, that you have skills and you can, mm-hmm, train them for money. I think that is definitely a basic life skill that I think, yeah, every human should know that that's an option for them. So yeah, I will definitely consciously at least teach them that.
I think most people don't realize that they have the ability to create something of value.
Right.
I mean, maybe it's not a tangible product or some sort of like digital product, but there's something that they can sell and they can be good at selling it, you know? Jumping back to Edgar, actually. So the marketing that you guys have done for that, maybe not marketing, but the way that you bring people on board. So you guys do an invitation thing, correct? And you've been doing that from the start.
Yeah.
And you just kept it, like,
we've tested it and it's worked, so we've kept it. Yeah.
So the format there is somebody puts in their email address, and then is it, it's sort of like a faux invitation, correct? I mean, like,
I don't want to give it away, but they get invited. Yeah, basically how it works is you put in your email, and then we're always testing the sequence. Right now, like an hour or two later, you get your invitation. to be able to buy Edgar.
Gotcha. And then you guys also have a single price plan, correct?
Yeah. Well, basically we have a higher price plan, but it doesn't make sense for 99% of our customers. So sure, yeah, sure. Almost everyone's on the same price plan.
Have you guys tested doing multiple pricing plans?
We have. When we launched, we had the like, let's just like have a $500 a month and see if anybody signs up. I'm like, oh, nobody signed up. Because, you know, our tool is very specifically designed for small business, and we don't have a sales team. It's all self-serve. And the tool was created, like, if you're an agency, we don't have groups for brands. We don't have multiple logins. Like, that's just not how we're built. So it's, yep, no surprise that, you know, the customers we built for, the customers that have come. So I'm a big believer in staying really focused on what you do well. And, you know, at this point we have about 6,000 customers. That's a tiny chunk of small businesses in,
sure,
the state of Texas alone.
Right.
You know, like, we have a lot further to go for small business. So we want to stay focused there.
What's like the biggest, are there any big changes to Edgar coming, or like any big projects that you guys are working on? I know you guys are a pricing change.
Yeah, Yeah, we're raising our pricing for the first time. So that's exciting. That was definitely a scary move because people, you know, we're a higher priced tool for the market, largely because we don't have the $10 plan. We don't have the free plan. So people are already like, I actually always joke, I'm like, oh, we're just like Hootsuite, except way more expensive. It's a joke. We actually do something totally different than Hootsuite. Sure. So many people see our tool and it's just like, well, I guess that's what they are.
Yeah.
So it's definitely scary raising the price, but also I think it's time. It's been 2 years now, and I'm not afraid of showing people that we are something different. And I think a price can be a great way to do that. And other changes, you know, again, we're very focused. Like, we're looking at what other tools are doing, and other tools in our space are going very Swiss Army knife, like a little bit of everything. We want to stay focused on what we do really well, which is build a library of content and then repeat it without you having to go in and refill your queue and reschedule everything over and over again. So we're less about adding on big new things and more about just constantly improving the things that we do. And
so what's the people that are they're working on the product side of Edgar. So what's for them, is it more about optimizing the current stuff that's already there, or?
Yeah. And sometimes that is bigger than it sounds. I mean, sure. Both on the front end and the back end. Like, we had a huge project totally rebuilding how your queue is generated. So often it's stuff like that that's not very exciting to talk about, but sure. You know, the load time went to 0.07 seconds or whatever. Right. So it does dramatically affect the customer's experience. Or we totally changed the interface of how the scheduling looks based on a lot of customer feedback. So it's often things that like don't sound that exciting, but actually do make the app much faster to use, or easier to use, or easier to understand, or faster to load in content, all those types of things.
Yeah.
What's so a lot of small businesses, especially SaaS companies, struggle with churn, and namely figuring out why people churn. So for you guys, what's sort of like the big hang up that people have about sticking around with your product?
So yeah, that's definitely been a huge challenge for us. And it's very clear, it's loading up the library. So
it's a lot of work up front.
Right. We're different from other tools, and it's hard for people to understand or buy into that totally different workflow. Like, people are used to doing social one 10-second update at a time. And we're basically saying, that's not faster. Instead, you're going to have to take 2 hours instead of 10 seconds multiple times a day. But I get it. Like, sitting down and taking that 2 hours is a huge challenge. And we find that people stick around once they have the tool set up, because this is somewhat your social for you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the value is pretty clear once it's set up. But you know, what kills me is when people get inside the tool and still don't understand what we do differently. When people get inside the tool and they're like, oh, so it's just the same. And I'm like, no. But like, I just have to take it as feedback that no matter how many times we explained it, no matter how great the onboarding was, like, we still, if a human can go through the process and not get it, like, there's still more that we can do.
Do you guys do much on the hand-holding people with the onboarding, or do you try to automate as much of that as possible?
So it's something we're experimenting with. In the past, we've automated it. Things like, you know, automatically pulling an RSS feed based on URL and their email address, like trying to find different automated ways to pull in content. But we're actually hiring now an onboarding specialist for our CS team, and that means someone whose full-time job will be helping people set up content, load in content, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Because I know, like Nathan Berry, ConvertKit, I mean, one of their big things is manually helping people move over. Which is a lot of work up front, but I mean, after you've got the stuff in there, fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely someone that, I've looked to for modeling for success. So we're going to try it out and see how it works for us.
Cool, right on. I think that's all I got. How can people get in touch or follow along?
Yeah, so you can find us at meetedgar.com. You can find me at LKR on Twitter, or blogging at laurabroder.com.
All right. Good deal. Well, thanks for hopping on the call, Laura. It's good talking to you.
Thanks.
All right. Another episode in the books. Hope you enjoyed it. Shoot me a note, josh@baremetrics.com, or on Twitter @Spigford. Let me know what you think and share this puppy around. Also, give it a rating on iTunes. if you like it. Or, hey, if you hate it, you can also leave a rating saying that you hate it. And, I'll probably think less of you, but that's fine. And tune in next week. We've got a bunch of other founder chats in the queue already. And, okay, that's all. I'm really bad at endings. You'll soon learn. So I'm just going to have to end it right here, right now. It's going to be awkward, but I'm just going to stop.